Welcome to Software Testing Unleashed, the podcast for testers, developers, and software makers who live quality as an attitude. Get fresh ideas and sharp insights to grow your mindset, to learn new methods, and to drive real change in how we build software. Better software and better teams for a better world. Hi, I'm Richie, software quality coach, keynote speaker, and author. My guest today is Lisa Crispin. Lisa is probably one of the personalities I don't need to introduce because she's so well known for her work. But in the unlikely event that you don't know her, she's a consultant, a speaker, a trainer, and an author. Together with Janet Gregory, she's co-authored influential books on agile testing, the most recent one, Holistic Testing, How to Weave Quality into Your Product. This is also the topic for our today's episode. She also created training courses that are taught around the world and helped shape how we think about testing in agile teams, not just with ideas, but with practical tools that teams actually use. In this episode, we talked about holistic testing and what it really means to build quality in at every stage of the development cycle. What if testing isn't just a phase, but something that starts before you write a single line of code? How do you bring developers, testers, and business people together so they actually understand each other? And why is rework often just a symptom of missed conversations? We explored how teams can use the holistic testing model to avoid surprises, reduce rework, and build shared understanding early. Lisa shared tips on how testers can lead with questions, connect across silos, and bring the whole team into quality. And we talked about the power of mind maps, visuals, and collaborative planning to make strategy visible and actionable. So now, enjoy the episode. Hi, Lisa. Great to have you on the show.
Well, Richie, it's wonderful to be here. I'm so excited about your podcast. I really feel like it's kind of filling a need that we've had and haven't had another. We have many testing podcasts, but I feel like this one is a unique angle, so I really like it.
Yeah. So I hope I can give something back to the community and inspire testers to have more and new ideas about how they do their job. And so it's a great honor that you are on the show here. We talk about a very, I think a topic everyone thinks of when he or she thinks of you. It's and Janet, it's holistic testing.
Yes. We're so happy that all of our years of work, we finally kind of converge on them. This is a model that maybe people will understand. So.
Yeah. I think we just go deep dive in there. What is holistic testing?
It's a combination of the idea of the whole team approach to quality. The whole team's responsible for quality and testing, which just comes it doesn't necessarily only come from the agile world, but I feel like it was more popularized with things like extreme programming and Scrum. And also the fact that we're testing all the way around the whole software development lifecycle. So we have this infinite loop, and there's testing activities at every stage of that, which Janet and I were inspired back in 2016 by Dan Ashby's continuous testing model. And we're like, we have to enlarge on this, because if you look at the DevOps loop, if you search for that online, it has a test stage, which I think they mean the automated test and continuous integration. I don't think they're suggesting there is a test phase, but it looks like that to people. Mm. And we wanted to really emphasize and help people understand is there's stuff you need to do through the whole life cycle to build quality into your product and make your customers happy and make you happy.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to have this view on the all over quality development process and not just a testing phase in former times at the end of the project and in agile at the last day of the sprint.
Right. Yeah. The mini waterfall. Yeah. Mm.
So let's go into what are the different phases you mentioned there, and the testing techniques or the quality stuff which is done in this phases of the software development cycle.
Well, we call them stages because they're not gated. There aren't handoffs. But you know, it starts with discovery. The business decides what change do they want to make next, and we can ask a lot. We can test business ideas even in that stage.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully somebody with a testing mindset or quality attitude, like you say, ask good questions about, well, is it congruent with what we've done before as a business? Does it fit with our product? What problem does it solve for the business? What problem does it solve for the customer? And then, you know, as we keep going with that, we move into the planning stage. And now we're going to really define, you know, we've got this feature. What is the most important thing about this feature to the customers?
Mm.
What's the most important thing to us as a team so that we can maintain this software? What's important to the business? And choose the quality attributes that are most important. I know you talked, I think, in your first episode of this mm-hmm. podcast, you talked about the non-functional requirements, mm-hmm. like security, performance, things like that. Those don't get talked about because the business people often assume that the delivery team will know what to do.
Yeah.
and so we need to talk about those. So Janet and I like to call them quality attributes. I've heard people call them cross-functional requirements, which mm-hmm. I like that because they are functional.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we call them. I know why we call them non-functional, but again, kind of the wrong message. And the most important thing we do there, I think, is think about risks, which mm-hmm. I've also heard you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I am surprised now that I've been a consultant for a few years, how many times I go into a team and they're awesome. They're doing test-driven development. They're doing pair programming. They're doing continuous integration. But they're just taking the requirements given to them by product and not asking a single question and not thinking about risk at all. And it's like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to prevent bugs. So yeah. We need to think about that now. And then once we slice that, you know, analyze all those things so we can prioritize, because our human brains can't hold more than about 6 priorities, and plan for those and create a strategy. And we can use the holistic testing model to create that strategy. Now we move into, okay, let's plan at the story level. Let's really dig deep into each story and make sure we have that shared understanding of what mm-hmm. we're about to build. And again, we're preventing a lot of defects before we've ever written a line of code.
Yeah.
And then we start building, testing. How do we want to instrument our code so that we can monitor it and have observability? And you know, we can do a lot of testing, even exploratory testing at the story level. As we deploy it to a mm-hmm. test environment that's maybe more like production, then we can start testing those quality attributes, especially.
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of the automated testing. Make sure that we satisfy requirements and now start doing exploratory testing, accessibility testing, all those other human-centric testings that can't be automated.
Mm-hmm.
And today we have the technology to have release strategies where we can actually deploy to production as frequently as we want. Small batches are the key because that lowers your risk.
Mm.
If you deploy a tiny change and it breaks, you know exactly what broke. And we can put those in production. We can do testing in production if it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Some business domains, you can't do that. But at least observe what's happening to customers. Maybe release it just to a few customers. Again, these are all, we need a testing mindset to spot those patterns, to spot anomalies, to spot risks mm-hmm. as things are going into production so we can respond to them quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we observe how customers are using, like, how many times have you seen, we created this feature and the customer's maybe not using it at all?
Yeah.
Or using it in a totally weird way we did not anticipate.
Yeah.
And so from what we learn, that may feed into the business's next change of, we want to fix that feature, or we want to, it was really popular. We want to build it up some more. So we're doing this all the way around the whole cycle.
I think there are some very interesting points. What you say is to take the learnings into the next sprint or into the next phase or next stage, iteration or something like that. This is so often said in the project, but it's not done. A lot of teams are still struggling with themselves and what they are doing and they are delivering, but not asking the user or the client and what he thinks about the feature they delivered. How can we put more focus on this in the team?
Well, but part of that, unfortunately, is due to environments where people are overloaded. and they don't really even have time
to
think about what happens. Like, let's throw this over to operations and get it in production, and we're working on the next thing, which is that's a global problem within that company. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's raising awareness, and I've been trying to do this for years of trying to make testers understand, like, get involved on the right side of that DevOps loop because you have the skills. People get scared, like, well, I don't know how to use those monitoring tools, or I don't know how to read the log files, or things like that. There's just so many wonderful tools now that are so easy to use, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And but also, especially, people need to start building relationships. If they're not in a team that's got the "we build it, we run it" mentality already, they need to go and build relationships with the people who do run it, with operations specialists, platform engineers, site reliability engineers, and talk to them and ask them, what are you seeing in production? What risks are you feeling that are hurting us?
Mm-hmm.
We can take what we learn from them and put it back into our testing strategy to make sure we cover those.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we build up those relationships, we get more collaboration, more cooperation. Because when I say the whole team approach, I don't just mean the delivery team. You may or may not have a platform engineer embedded on your team. If you don't, you really need to build that relationship. You need relationships with designers. You need relationships with marketing people because they're using all kinds of analytic tools and they know what the customers are doing, hopefully. And so I see so many people who are testers, quality engineers, whatever title you want to call them. They're so spread so thin, they don't even have the time to stop and think, I need to be a quality leader.
Mm.
We need quality leadership. And again, anybody on the team can do it. I find that testers tend to ask questions that, for whatever reason, nobody else thinks of. But, and I think that's inspiring to people. It's like, well, I'm killing myself, you know, testing at the end of each sprint or whatever. But what if I could get a conversation going? What if I can find one person who's feeling the same way I do on my team? Maybe there's a developer who sees that problem. Brainstorm with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Say, how can we get more people interested in this, making a change here?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we want to make a change of early in our planning stage, we want to do risk storming or some other form of risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
How can we get the team on board with that? Who else on the team might want to do this? And then get those people involved and brainstorm together. The more people that you can get on your side, then you have a chance to influence change. So those are the kind of things, because we're not going to get anywhere if we're just suffering and doing all the hard work ourselves.
Yeah.
We need to get the whole team, make those problems visible. Because honestly, teams I see that have the situation, when the developers understand what's happening, they don't want the testers to have to do all this soul-crushing work at the end of the iteration when they're all done, right? They don't want that. They're nice, hopefully nice people.
Yeah.
And they want to solve the problem together once they're aware of the problem.
Yeah.
And what is costing the team, the company, the customers? You know, everybody does want good quality. And so we have to make problems visible, make our contributions visible of how we are improving quality and how the whole team can join in that.
I think there's this a good opportunity for testers because they are used to ask questions because most time our requirements user stories are lousy, so we have to ask what we have to test. And so we are used to contact all the people around, all the stakeholders and get in contact and are one of the most people in the team who are communicating with so many people around the project. So it's a good way to use this connection and to ask, what can we do better, what can we learn from each other, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, years ago, I don't know if you know Pete Whalen, he had on his business card, QA, question asker.
Yeah, great.
I think that's the best acronym, the best way to interpret that acronym of QA.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned in the planning, I heard it just as a little side note, to take also quality attributes for inner quality, like maintainability and so on. I think this is very important. Maybe you can give us there some inputs. What are the benefits of focusing that too?
Well, you need that. Kent Beck used to call this internal and external quality. So external quality, if you look at our agile testing quadrants, external quality is what's important to the business and the customers. Internal quality is what's important to us. They hired us to write the software because of our expertise. what are the best ways in our context that we can build that software? So for example, wanting to practice test-driven development, where we write the little unit tests and then write the code that makes that pass, that should be a decision of the development team. Because nobody should tell us how to write the software. They hired us to do that. But, you know, if we have all kinds of implementation problems that we need to solve, and it's not up to the product owner to tell us how to implement something.
Yeah.
You know, how should we be hosting it? What tools should we use to containerize it? Or, you know, what's an appropriate way to do that? How can we make it, let's say it's desktop software. What about installability? How can we make sure we build that in? Not just for ourselves, but our customers. Portability. Maybe we're eventually going to put it on other platforms. We want to think about that now. So there's, and especially, you know, teams spend way more time reading code than they do writing code.
Yeah.
Because a lot of code is hard to understand.
Mm.
So if we can save ourselves that toil and make the code easy to understand and well documented, good internal documentation so that new people on the team know where everything is and what the process is for, you know, doing pull requests or whatever it is. When we have all that infrastructure, we have a nice solid foundation.
Mm.
And then we can work at our best.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think it gives the opportunity also to talk more in detail to make the developers work, the daily work life easier, to maintain their code and to refactor some things and so on. And I think there's often not much clarity in that. Why should we do this, all this stuff, because of the technical debt or something like that, to get more awareness for these topics too. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of, I know Dora is something different in Europe, but yeah. Google's Dora, which started out as DevOps research and assessment. They're trying to get DevOps out of the name because, as they realize, it's just software development.
Yeah.
Not limited to DevOps. All of their research is targeted at what are the good capabilities and the good practices that enable teams to enjoy their work, to be very productive, to be very satisfied, and to make the customers happy as well. So the focus is not on just the technology. The focus is on how does the technology help the teams, help the organization.
Mm.
And, you know, we need to enjoy our work.
Yeah.
There's been much research over the years, the last 30 years, that it's not a tool that makes, or a tech stack that makes a team successful. It's having the right people and enabling them to do their best work.
Mm.
Sometimes that's just getting out of their way.
Yeah. Yeah, when I look at the holistic testing and what you said about it is, so that's, it looks like to me that their testing and quality is much more a people business than a tech business. So just dealing with the guys around you, yeah.
Yeah, those relationships are so important. And, you know, like Isabel was saying, how important communication is.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe we get more people into testing that are good communicators. That's my experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe more musicians, more artists or something. But and just facilitating. Like a lot of times as a tester, I felt like I can bring the business people and the tech people together and get them having a conversation where they actually understand each other.
Mm.
And I kind of liken it to if I take my car to the mechanic because it's making a funny noise.
Yeah.
I say, well, it's making this noise. And the mechanic is like, well, maybe it's blah, blah, blah. And I don't understand what they're saying, and they don't understand what I'm saying.
Mm.
If somebody could be there that spoke both of our languages.
Mm.
And I think that's where we fit in. I don't feel like testers or quality engineers have to be coders. They don't have to be programmers. We already have great programmers on the team, but they have to be able to have those conversations. They need technical awareness. They need to understand the architecture of the product. They need to be able to use the tools like the IDEs and they need to be able to use the monitoring tools, whatever it is. We need that. We're all technical. We're all using computers. Doesn't mean we have to write code. But we need to be able to bring people together because we need to be able to speak to the business people in their language too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big job.
Yeah, it is. It is. So when we look at the planning from when the tester gets started and talk about the quality attributes and so on, and usually you document it in a, like a test strategy is something in Confluence or wherever you go with your documentation. How can we lift this documentation in our process, and so that's not only written down in one place and now we have it there and everybody does the same job like yesterday? How can we enforce the people to use this and to lift this test strategy?
Nobody wants to read the documentation, but although it is important, that's one of the things that the Google's research has shown, that teams with high quality internal documentation perform better and people are happier, less burnout. But for me, I just try to use something that encourages collaboration. It doesn't work everywhere, but I like to do my test strategy on a mind map because I can use a mirror board or something with a mind map. Everybody can be in there at the same time, adding their ideas, brainstorming together. And then we can track what we can change that easily. And we can track what we do. So, you know, we've got all these testing activities on the mind map and we can check them off, or we can say, ooh, this thing's broken. We can add screenshots or, you know, screencasts or something to that, so to show that. It makes everything so much visible at a glance. And like I say, that doesn't necessarily work everywhere, but whatever you can do to make it accessible and easy to change. And, you know, Word documents or it's really hard. I used to write these big test plans back in the 90s in waterfall context, and I was so proud of them, but nobody but me ever looked at them. So I don't even think my fellow testers looked at it. But at least with something like a mind map or something visual, impact map, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it. I have a much better chance of getting people, my teammates, to look at it, go over it with me, and then they start thinking. I've seen so many times when we put something on a whiteboard, whether it's physical or virtual, it triggers an idea in somebody. Like, oh, I just thought of this thing that's going to save us, you know, 180% of our time. And those visuals, they help us think laterally outside the box. And get they help us overcome all of our unconscious biases that hold us back.
So
that's what I'm a fan of. But I mean, as you say, it's a big challenge.
I think what you said is also very important when we use such a mind map in Miro or another board, and to get the people really involved in creating this with us, and not just the tester is in front and drawing on the board and they're all looking and giving some input, but also really work in this document. They are more connected to the work, and then maybe they'll look at 1 week later too.
The last team I worked on full time, I kept wanting to try mind mapping. And I finally the manager's like, okay, let's, for the next story, let's mind map. And people on the team were like, oh, that story's so easy, we don't need to mind map it. And I'm like, that's okay, then it won't take us long. An hour later, we had this huge mind map, and it's like, that's not just one story. Once they try it, they might see the value of it.
Lisa, what do you think when a team is implementing holistic testing? What are the big challenges they have to overcome to use it as a real quality mindset?
Well, I mean, they need to have time. So they need to have time to do something different and learn something different, which is a big challenge. I tell people usually if they are in a context where it's like, oh, people are kind of stressed and there's a lot of deadlines and they're really pushed, just try it at the planning stage. Because I think that's where you get the most bang for the buck, if you will. Because I see the lack of shared understanding is what causes a lot of problems. So we think we know what to do in the story. We build it. We test it even. We give it to the product owner and they're like, no, that's not what I wanted. Now we got to do it over again. Rework is horrible. And a whole so many teams back. Or even worse, it gets all the way to production. And now we've got people calling customer support. And a lot of times they'll say, well, that wasn't really a bug. That just was a missing requirement. Hello? We didn't need to miss that requirement. We could have thought about it more, you know, use some visuals. Let's flow diagram it. Let's use the state diagram. Let's use the contact diagram. Again, I love all the visuals. We could have invested a little more time in that planning stage and saved us a whole bunch more time in rework.
I think
so that's where I encourage people to start. But I do encourage people to learn about the activities on that right side, because that's where people I encounter and that are in a testing type role, they haven't had a chance to go out and do that. And fortunately, there's so many wonderful resources to learn about.
I think when I look at teams I worked with, they don't have the look on the right side very, very intense. So they, for them, it's done with, it's released, and then they go to their next work. So I think this is one issue to go in. And as you said, the planning phase to do it appropriate with enough of amount of time and in intensity to have a good requirement, a user story that succeeded the production phase then and not had a bug or something like that in the back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you have do you have an idea what would be a next version of the holistic testing framework? What is missing for you now there when you are with your experience? Maybe you have add-on.
We get good feedback on the model, and again, we have example testing activities on it, but again, those could be different for your team or your organization. It's just examples to help you get thinking. I can't think of anything to necessarily improve on the model, but what I would like, because I don't get a chance really, I've played around with a Gen AI and LLMs and stuff, but not in real life. I haven't been on a team using that, and I would benefit from some visual models about using like agent AI tools or whatever. How do you implement those, or how do those apply? Because those also apply all around the cycle, right? Mm-hmm. I would love to see visuals in that area to help people like me understand them. Because, well, you know, let's face it, I think that AI is overhyped, but at the same time, it's a tool.
Yeah.
We need to use and see how we can benefit from it safely. And like you said, trust it. And so I would like to see, maybe there are visual models around that and I just haven't seen them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Maybe some response comes now from the community for that. Yeah. So we will see. Yeah.
And maybe we can. I mean, we've had other people add things into the holistic testing model that are specific to their, like maybe UX is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really add a lot of things about the UX design and making sure in production that that's working as they want it to. I think people should all add whatever they need to add to that model. It's just a thinking tool. It's not a rule.
Yeah. That I think that's very important to have it as an inspiration and to tailor it for their own environment and their own context there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lisa. Thank you very much for this introduction into holistic testing. I think it's very a very, very good model to use for each project and each team to get this quality mindset, quality as an attitude, which is one of the claims of this podcast. And I think that matches so fantastic there. And I'm really happy that you joined here the show. And I think it would be not the last time that you are a guest here.
Oh, I would love to come back. But yes, I hope that people look into it and see if they find it helpful. And people, feel free to contact me. You can find me on LinkedIn. Find me on my website, lisacrisper.com, because I love talking about testing, obviously. Yeah. So
great. That's a great opportunity. We will also put your contact details into the show notes so everyone can contact you if you want. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richie. It's great.